we couldn't really go out and attract young people or new employers without this good piece of infrastructure.
This is episode 309 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. As one of our most rural states, Maine has many regions lacking in high-quality connectivity. Over the past few years, we've seen several communities engage in projects to develop publicly owned networks. They want to bring broadband to places where big ISPs won't upgrade their services. In this week's podcast, Christopher talks with Julie Jordan, who lives and works in one of those rural Maine communities. The towns of Baileyville and Callis have joined together to form the Down East Broadband Utility. They plan to deploy a fiber optic network in the region for residents and businesses. Their project caught the eye of the Post Road Foundation, a nonprofit organization that is researching the possibilities of linking smart grid applications and multiple utility functions. In this interview, Christopher talks with Julie about the Down East Broadband Utility Project, some of the challenges they've had to overcome, and how the Post Road Foundation will be involved in studying their project. Now here's Christopher with Julie Jordan from the Down East Broadband Utility in Maine.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And today I'm speaking with Julie Jordan, the director of the Down East Broadband Utility. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris.
I'm really excited to be talking to you because I was just out in Maine, where the Down East region is, and I find Maine to be inspiring in terms of the work that's being done from local communities, and I'm just really excited to tell more people about what's happening. But the first thing is, when we say Down East, and talking about the communities of Baileyville and Callis, I think Lisa wanted to make sure I pronounced that correctly.
that
people,
you did.
People have a sense of what we're talking about. So where are Baileyville and Callis?
Okay, geographically, we're actually considered way down east. I think most people think of Rockland, Rockport, Camden as true down east region. So we're north of Bar Harbor by about 3 hours on the Canadian border. Oh, St. Croix River divides us from New Brunswick, Canada. So we're about as far east in the state as you can get.
And that is on the right on the Canadian border, so people might be thinking of it as the northeast part of the state, but it is called Down East.
It is. It's a little confusing. We like to keep everybody on their toes.
So what is what's life like in the Down East, in your particular corner of the Down East, I should say?
Life is really nice and good, clean living. It's rural. We're a tad isolated geographically because we're not close to an interstate. There's a main road called the Airline Road that will take you from Bangor directly to us. It's about 100 miles due east. But other than that, it's Route 1. So we're pretty far from the interstate. Well, we're the largest producer, I think, of wild blueberries for the world's production. I think we produce 85% of wild blueberries. And we have, of course, the forestry industry and paper products. So Baileyville is more of a manufacturing center. There's Woodland Pulp and St. Croix Tissue are the big employers in that area. And then a little south of Baileyville, which is Callis, about 8 miles, they do more of the retail sector for the county, basically, on both sides of the border, Charlotte County, New Brunswick, and Washington County, Maine. So it's a slow pace, a really nice small town, great scenery.
And the Down East Broadband Utility, it came about in part because of a need to encourage more economic development, which is, I think, when you hear a description of your community, one of the things people are often thinking of is it growing or shrinking in the modern economy, and places without high quality internet access seem to be on the shrinking end of that generally.
Oh, that's so true, Chris. Our project really started when we were focusing on economic development for the region. Our area's been stagnant and actually declining in demographics for the past 2 decades for a lot of reasons, but we didn't want to see that continue. So the two communities got together and said, let's focus on the region as a whole, not each community individually, and see what we can do to attract new employers to this area. And that's when we hit the wall with our infrastructure issues, namely broadband, that although we have some service, it wasn't always reliable and it wasn't fast enough to accommodate the needs of a lot of employers, including one that's already here, St. Croix Tissue. The equipment today for paper production is all computerized, and they just really needed to have a fiber connection. So that's how we got started. We couldn't really go out and attract young people or new employers necessarily without this good piece of infrastructure.
Before the Down East Broadband Utility was created then, I'm just curious, how, as you were weighing your options, did you rapidly decide that you'd have to do it yourself, or was that something you came to after having some other plans that went different directions, or how did that come about?
It did. It came about with research. I mean, our first, we didn't know what we were doing, certainly, even how to start. So the first thing we did was called all of our local providers, including our incumbents, you know, the bigger players, to the table and asked for their advice. You know, how would you do this if you were going to do it? What are your suggestions for any kind of model to structure ownership of the fiber? And we got lots of great input. Especially from our locals right around here. And based on those discussions, we decided, gee, what if we formed our own utility, a regional one, which fortunately for Maine, we can do here, the Maine State Legislature, and you're probably familiar with the statute that was tweaked in 2017, allowing municipalities to form together a regional utility strictly for the purposes of broadband. Either expanding existing infrastructure or putting a new infrastructure in place. So that's what we went with, so that the utility will own the fiber and then lease it to providers with an open access system.
I mean, you could start by telling us a little bit about how much you're expecting it to cost, but I'm curious about your reaction to that as well.
The first reaction was definitely sticker shock. When we met with providers, because again, we hadn't done a design study at this point to get a real figure, but these providers had experience in the field. And we said, what do you think? You know, just guesstimate. Are we talking $1 million? Are we talking, you know, $20 million? We had no idea. It's basically 87 miles that we were trying to fiber up here. We want to reach 100% of the premises in each community. And the figures varied really quite a bit from each provider. So that when we did finally get a design plan in place and saw the real figure, which was a bit less than most of the providers had started us out with, it was a relief. It was like, wow, we can really do this. We can really do it. So I think the first numbers came in high. Some might have been a little lower, and I think we don't know the final figure yet, Chris, but we're estimating about $3 million. I'll be honest, I think, you know, we've miscalculated on a few items in the pro forma, for instance, insurance. Pole owners require $5 million in liability plus a surety bond for any work being done on poles, and that was almost twice as much as we expected. And that mostly was because we are not a tried and true entity yet. Mm-hmm. We didn't have 3 years of audited financials. We actually had trouble finding an insurance company that would write a bond for us. That delayed our project about 6 weeks. We got numbers as low, and this was without design work, so these were true guesstimates based really on miles and a rough guess about of premises, from as low as our first one, I think, was $2 million, maybe even a little under, to $4.8 million. That was the range mm-hmm. that we got. And we thought, well, if we could be somewhere around three, then we think we can raise the money. And that's when we paid for the design work. And it's a big risk. It's a jump you have to make because the design work cost $80,000, and we don't have that money. We tried to get grants, and we couldn't. So we're borrowing the $80,000 just to make sure that $3 million number is actually going to be real.
And that's really helpful, because one of the things you'll find, of course, is that when you get bids to actually do the work and begin constructing, that the more rigorous you were in the design, the more accurate the bid should be and the easier of a path you should have through the rest of the process.
Right. That's correct.
Now, are you on the three-ring binder?
We are.
That's got to be a tremendous help. There's a lot of communities, I think, who are thinking, well, how do you get out of Down East and back to Bangor on your way to Boston or something like that? But that's been solved by you. If you want to just briefly let people know who aren't familiar with that project, like a 90-second background on it would be really helpful.
Okay, so the three-ring binder was, I believe, funded with $26 million of federal funds to go up the coast of Maine and circle around the top and come back down and connect, maybe in central Maine. But it's basically the backbone of fiber network. So the thought process was, if we put this in place, then we'll have all these providers come and pull the fiber off the three-ring binder and take it to the last mile, the last premise, take it down the side street, and everybody will hook up because that part is already there. That didn't really work out, and I'm not sure when it was installed. Chris, you probably know this.
Right. Well, it was built after the 2010 or 2009 stimulus, so I would assume around 2010, 2011, 2012-ish.
So a lot of it remained unleased and still is unleased. I think it's owned by Maine Fiber Company now, and they lease it out to providers who will use it, say, in our project to take it out to the last mile. So it is helpful, definitely.
Good. Yeah, I did a conversation with Fletcher Kittredge in which we talked about middle mile versus last mile and some of this, because I have been arguing for more than 10 years that the middle mile investments do not catalyze last mile investments. The economics don't quite work in that way. But you do need to have the middle mile for communities like yours to be able to build last mile. So if people are interested, Fletcher has been a wonderful person helping folks in Maine. He runs GWI, a company that's been doing internet access for a long time. But if people really get into that debate, there's a podcast in our archives that covers it. But at any rate, I think it's worth noting that because of that really smart investment and because the Maine Fiber Company keeps that fiber open for others to use, it's terrific for you. And actually, It seems to me that that's sort of how you want to run your network locally as well, right?
Yes, it's the same model. We'll lease the fiber to the providers and have them bring it out to the customers.
And to do that, you're actually working with another of the local companies in Maine that's making a difference. Can you just tell us about how everything fits together in terms of the role Pioneer plays in building the network and then how you'll operate it?
Okay, so Pioneer Broadband was one of our local providers that we sat down and talked with when we were first talking about this project. And they're based, Chris, in northern Maine, out of Houlton. And they had a little experience in putting fiber optic networks in Houlton, Maine, and a few other smaller communities. And they were really very creative in their approach with us because they wanted to expand their territory. They wanted to grow, and they wanted to move southward. And they thought we would be a good project for them to make that move, and we would be a good fit. So they offered to do our feasibility study for us at no cost, because, see, we had no money for that either.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were very appreciative of that and asked them to please do the design work. So they've done all of the design work for us, and they will oversee the build to have the network constructed, at which point, and we're in this process right now, we'll issue a request for a proposal for all providers throughout the state to operate and maintain this network. We don't have the expertise to do that, and frankly, we don't want it. We bring experts in, offer a multi-year contract to operate and maintain, and pay them an annual fee to do that. And that's built into our model, our financing model.
To be clear, the company that will be maintaining it, they'll just be maintaining it, making sure it works, and other providers will be able to access it.
That's right.
Now, will the maintainer be able to also offer services on it?
Yes, they will.
Okay. So they'll just be making sure that if something breaks, it's fixed and that there's
and
a good...
And they'll do billing, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So the utility will accept the lease payments from all the providers that are using the fiber and take those lease payments, pay the firm that's going to operate and maintain, and pay off the debt.
So the utility is really the, specifically the Down East Broadband Utility, is really there to make it happen and to deal with the financing. But aside from that, there's the role is just making sure that it continues to work from an administrative point of view.
Correct.
It's one of those things that I think people sometimes miss the importance of, because without you, it wouldn't start. Now, if you can have a small ongoing role, I'm sure you'll view that as a success.
Yes. We'll view it as a great success.
Now, one other entity is coming in to help make this work, which is terrific. It's an organization called the Post Road Foundation. Tell us a little bit about them.
Post Road Foundation is an arm of the Kennedy School of Economics from Harvard University. And they've been funded in part by the Rockefeller Foundation to study intelligent infrastructure or smart grid technology, specifically in rural communities across the country. And so they reached out to us because we're rural, number one. We've done a little groundwork here by starting to build a fiber optic network. And we're also in a region that has an electric cooperative. So their study, Chris, is going to be to examine the territory of this electric cooperative and do a what if. What if we had a fiber optic network that went throughout this territory on all of these utility poles that combined all forms of infrastructure, electricity, internet, sewer, water, smart city technology, home security. You know where I'm going with this, right? What if it was all combined? Would it be more efficient use of energies? Would it cost less for the consumer? And would it leave a softer footprint in the environment? And so we're going to be part of that study. We were one of five communities, or we're a region, actually, that was selected. Two others in Maine, and I think one in Georgia and one in Michigan. And they'll start that study any day now. They should finish up by the end of September and publish and release the results and then take it from there if the results are as expected.
Yeah, one of the things that I'm very excited about with them is that they, I think, get it. it's always dangerous when someone comes to you advice and you go around telling everyone how smart they are because they've listened to you. I'm only one of many people that they've consulted as they've been looking at this, but I'm very excited because I think they fully understand the ways in which there's all kinds of indirect benefits, some of which have material benefits for communities to make sure that everyone has this high quality access. So I think people should really pay attention to what they come out with in September.
Yeah, we're really excited. And you know, the potential is enormous if the results of the study are as hoped, to then start modeling the build out of these infrastructures of communities on what they've learned and what it could really just, it could just empower communities all over the country.
And one of the things that I think they'll bring is maybe perhaps new sources of capital, new entities that will have an interest in investing in this that will really help as we see more and more rural areas, I think, doing what you're doing. But there's one other piece of one of the things that I love about Maine that I want to touch on, and that is that you've had some slowdowns because of pole attachment and pole challenges, but things are looking up. Tell us a little bit about why you're optimistic about poles being less of a hassle for you than others.
Well, I'm going to just credit the state of Maine, the Maine Public Utilities Commission, for finally taking a hard look at what it takes for anyone, any organization to attach to a utility pole. The process is so lengthy and cumbersome and actually isn't uniform in any way. So one pole owner can have different requirements than another one. So the PUC, Maine PUC, took a good hard look and said, wait a minute, we think this is out of control. We want to really help communities put fiber in place or expand an existing infrastructure. So we're gonna change the rules a little bit. And for us, it was exciting because pole attachment is the largest cost for this project, for I think anybody, definitely for us, huge. It's almost $1 million of the $3 million is our estimate.
Well, and if I could just jump in for a second, it's also a source of uncertainty because, you know, for your financial arrangement, you're expecting after 2 years to be negotiating your line of credit into a loan. And if after 2 years only half the network is built because of pole attachment challenges and you're not even sure when you're going to be able to build the rest of it, that's going to be a major financial headache.
Yes, it will.
And so fortunately, you'll avoid that.
We can avoid some of the costs that we've projected because the PUC has said we're going to let some of these people attach behind the poles or at the bottom of a pole. And that will lower costs, that you don't have to get five other wire owners up there to move their wire 5 inches to accommodate ours, which is, really adds to the cost. But as far as how long pole owners can take to allow you to attach, that's probably not going to change for a while. Certainly not in time to accommodate our project if we move ahead. We do hope that the rental fees that are attached to pole attachment may change to our benefit before the end of the summer. That's our big hope.
And so to reiterate, the two of the big things for you are that you can go on the back of the poles and at the bottom of the poles.
We go on the back or the bottom. In the past, the pole owner could say, you know what, we think you need to go halfway up the pole. And there are two other lines that are there already. So you're going to have to get the people who have those lines here to move theirs. And then we're going to let you attach. So now you've got to go to another party and say, all right, will you please move your line? And you fill out those applications and you pay those fees. And then you hope they come and do that in a timely manner. I mean, right now, pole owners can take up to 179 days before they'll say, okay, go ahead, you're good to go. Now, do they have to take that? No. And will they? We don't know. That's our gamble.
Right. Well, we're very enthusiastic about these changes, and we really hope that it leads to you having as minimal a headache as possible.
thank you.
but I guess I have one final question, which is kind of the local reaction. I mean, has there been anyone that's sort of skeptical of this, or in some areas the incumbents go to a great effort to try to confuse people or mislead them? Has there been opposition to what you're doing?
Certainly, I've gotten some pushback, not as much as we expected. But I mean, I'm not sure that anybody thinks this is really going to happen yet. I'm not sure we're on anybody's radar enough to get a lot of pushback. But there has been some. There's been a lot of skepticism that this is a good project, a viable project, a worthwhile project. I think, we're preparing for some major pushback. So we've engaged a marketing firm to keep our message positive and out there, because there's been a lot of time between when the voters said, yes, we're going to allow you to borrow this money and build this network, and when they actually see somebody on a pole attaching fiber. Mm-hmm. We don't want enthusiasm to wane. We don't want our positive message about what this can do for this area to lessen in any regard. So we need to keep potential subscribers engaged. And so that's why we've hired a digital marketing firm, just to really target these two communities, keep the news out there all the time, and we'll combine that with a grassroots effort with our buttons and our posters and coming soon to a utility pole near you, fiber optic broadband.
Yes, that's excellent.
We're hoping that's going to really help to keep our subscription rates where we want them to be.
And so what is the timeline as we wrap up the show here?
We've already submitted our first pole attachment application. So the best case, if pole owners are as excited as we are about this, they'll let us start doing work in July. If they take it to 179 days, then we're looking at December, January.
Yeah, and that's unfortunately rough. I'm being in a part of the country that also has winter, that can be challenging.
Yes, it can be.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll look forward to looking in on you and getting a sense of how things are going. And thank you so much for sharing this model. I think it's inspiring for folks, not just that you decided to move forward with this, but that you're able to work with local providers in such a collaborative fashion.
Thanks, Chris.
That was Christopher with Julie Jordan from the Down East Broadband Utility in Maine discussing their fiber optic project. Read more about the project at muninetworks.org and at downeastbroadband.com. We have transcripts for this and other podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Email us at podcast@muninetworks.org with your ideas for the show. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. Follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter. The handle is @muninetworks. You can subscribe to this podcast and the other ILSR podcasts, Building Local Power and the Local Energy Rules podcast. Access them on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or any place you get your podcasts. Never miss out on our original research. Subscribe to our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. Thanks to Arnie Hughesby for the song Warm Duck Shuffle, licensed through Creative Commons, and thanks for listening to episode 309 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.